Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Our big event, our fourth annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, was this past Saturday, and we wound up with 1,800 participants. Our event is now the largest women's healthcare symposium in the entire country. 1,800 participants, 21 physicians, and it's all free. And if you calculate out the number of hours women were actually seated in a seminar, we have over 5,000 hours of education in that one day. Very exciting. Here's some of the comments we receive from women. Melody writes, I wanted to send my personal thanks to you for caring about the unique medical needs of women. To provide education and encouragement to empower our own care is a great service to the community. And Sarah wrote, I brought my mother. We were each looking to get different things out of the conference, and it exceeded all of our desires. The positive and energetic attitudes of everyone, the informative seminars, and the beautiful location really made a difference. Cynthia wrote, it's convinced me to focus more on me, myself, and I, for without me and good health, there could be no way I can continue to do the things I value and care about with the intensity I desire. The classes, seminars were very informative, and slides helped emphasize the topic. Great job, wrote Ruthie. Claudia wrote, my mom died from breast cancer 3.5 years ago. I am terrified of getting this. The doctor speaking on breast cancer was wonderful and really helped make sense of this horror. She was worth the entire day. That doctor, by the way, was Dr. Christy LaRonga, who was our breast cancer seminar speaker last year, and she's Dr. LaRonga's from Moffitt. And today, when we begin our healthcare clinic, the topic will be advances in breast cancer treatment, and one of Dr. LaRonga's colleagues, Dr. John Kylik, is with us today, and we're very excited about that. Three more comments on the symposium this past Saturday. I am encouraged to know that Focus on Females exists, that people care enough to execute this event, and that women are taking advantage of the opportunity. Another one, I should have invited my husband to come with me because most of the material I heard today was for all genders, which is great. And the last one, this is so informative that I feel empowered. We read about these issues, but really you have to spend time to be proactive and research and ask lots of questions. And that was from Lorraine. As most of you know, the annual symposium and this radio clinic is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net with immediate impact to save lives and protect families. We make you a lay expert on your individual medical problems to better partner with your existing physician, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. And as I mentioned a moment ago, today is Advances in Breast Cancer Treatment. And with me is Dr. John Kyluk. John, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you for having me today.
Now, John is with Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute. His focus is on the breast cancer. He is an assistant professor also at USF. He was trained in medical school at Medical College of Virginia, graduating in 2001. His residency was at the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta, Georgia, in general surgery, finishing 2006, and then a fellowship at the H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute, completing in 2007 on breast surgical oncology. His research interests include areas of clinical research, including sentinel lymph node biopsy, nipple-sparing mastectomy, and micrometastatic breast cancer. And we'll review what those mean shortly. Dr. Kyluk is very interested in all topics of breast disease, including screening, prevention, diagnosis, and treatment. He strongly believes in treating the whole patient while under his care for a breast problem. And John, let's take this opportunity to talk about your research interest briefly. Sentinel lymph node biopsy, micrometastatic breast cancer. Why are those so important?
Well, when you talk about breast cancer, really the most important thing as far as figuring out what you're facing has to do with lymph nodes. When I'm talking to my patients, they come in to see me the first day and they say, well, what stage am I, or how bad is this? And I honestly can say I'm not sure. The best way I can describe it is that there's some growling in a cave, and I really don't know what's in that cave. It may sound like a chihuahua or a tiger, or I'm not sure, but basically what we need to do is find out what's in that cave, and that's what lymph nodes are. It's like shining a flashlight into that cave so you can see what's in that cave and so you can know, okay, well, what kind of spear do I need to kill that animal and what kind of battle we have to face.
So you would say that if a woman with breast cancer or a man with breast cancer has no lymph node involvement, what is that? Does that immediately tell you something about the prognosis of that patient?
That patient's prognosis is generally excellent. That those generally are what we refer to as a stage one breast cancer, and their prognosis is fantastic.
So that really demonstrates the necessity of knowing, understanding the status of those lymph nodes.
Correct.
And is there a particular lymph node that you'd first look for in breast cancer?
Well, historically, what was done was all the lymph nodes that drained the breast were removed. This was called an axillary dissection.
Under the armpit, right?
And so pretty much what you do is you remove all the lymph nodes, and you basically count up the lymph nodes and see how many of them have cancer in them.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble with that operation is that that's a big operation with lots of risk, namely arm swelling. What do lymph nodes do? Well, lymph nodes drain fluid. That's their purpose. And the lymph nodes underneath your arm drain it not only from the breast but from the arm itself. And if you remove too many lymph nodes from underneath the arm, your arm can potentially swell. That happens about 20% of the time if you take out all the lymph nodes. Now, as awareness is increased and the rate of mammography has increased, obviously we're finding tumors at smaller and smaller sizes, and the chances of them actually going to lymph nodes are less likely. So we had to kind of figure out something that was not as harmful to the patient, and that's where what we call a sentinel node comes in. And the way that works is you put some blue dye in some radioactive material within the breast, and those materials travel from the breast, and they actually go to the first lymph node that drains the breast, and you can just take out one or two lymph nodes. That gives us the same information than removing them all.
Great.
When I explain it to my patients, I usually say that sentinel node is what I call the gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And that if that node is negative, I'm happy, the patient's happier. Means the gate's closed. If that lymph node is positive, then we have to think about, well, do we need to remove the rest of the lymph nodes? And that's really the book answer, is to remove the rest of the lymph nodes.
Excellent. And that procedure of looking at the sentinel lymph node biopsy, is that done as a day procedure, in and out?
If you're doing a it depends on what the other operation is. When I think about breast cancer surgery, it's actually two separate operations. One is the lymph nodes, and two is, well, what are you going to do about the breast and the cancer itself within the breast? And that's either a lumpectomy or a mastectomy.
So you might do the surgical procedure for the breast cancer at the same time.
Absolutely.
As the sentinel.
Yeah. And that's the way it's done most of the time.
Okay.
And if it's a lumpectomy, generally those patients are able to go home that day. Obviously, a mastectomy is a bigger operation, and generally we keep those patients in the hospital.
Okay, good. Now let's back up a little bit. What can women do to screen against breast cancer?
Well, there's really a threefold attack on screening against breast cancer. The first part is self-breast exam. I think that is hugely important. I tell every single one of my patients that they are their best doctor, okay? No one knows their body better than themselves, and they need to examine their body and know what they're feeling for, okay? Now, everyone says, well, I don't know. I feel lots of lumps and bumps, and I don't know what's normal, what's abnormal. And that's the importance of doing your exam yourself, because every breast will change from month to month. It's just when the breast changes in the weight, it hasn't changed ever before. That's when you need to alert someone.
So that sounds like it's a good idea to get young women to start self-examination.
Absolutely.
So they know how their breasts will change month to month.
Especially when there's a family history or anything else. But, you know, the patient is never too young. You can never say, oh, well, it's never happened in my family before, because actually 80% of breast cancers aren't genetic. They just pop up out of the blue, and that's unfortunately very scary.
Scary, right. So let's just this, you know, for the audience listening out there, would you say an 18-year-old woman should start self-breast examinations?
Yes.
Or even younger?
Probably 18 is fine.
Okay. And how do they know how deep to palpate, to feel? How do you have an analogy to give, or how do you explain that to someone as far as how deep to push?
I think that the thing is usually it's done once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done on a regular basis. Usually we kind of recommend in the shower or something like that. And it's really, everyone's different as far as tenderness and how large the breast is. And that, I think that's why there's so many variations. There's so many different ways of doing it. And actually none of them are really right or wrong. It's just the bottom line is, as long as you're doing it and knowing your own breast, that's the bottom line.
We, at our big convention, we typically have a model on a block of wood of a breast, and there are some nodules in there to give women an idea that you can't just be superficial in when you're evaluating the breast. You really have to, you know, provide some level of pressure to get into the deeper tissues. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And okay, well, good.
Now, as far as other things people can do for screening, number two is get mammography, get a mammogram.
Okay.
It's very interesting when you look at mortality of breast cancer, which is basically how many people die of breast cancer every year. It's very interesting. If you look at it over the last 50 years, the rate of people dying stays the same until the late 80s, early 90s. Then all of a sudden, the rate of people dying from breast cancer just starts falling, okay? And so the question is, well, what are we doing all of a sudden in the late 80s, early 90s that is causing improved survival? Mm-hmm. And the answer can be traced back to mammography, plain and simple, because that's when you start seeing the pink ribbons. That's when people start saying, hey, listen, you need a mammogram. And with mammography, we're finding areas smaller and smaller. Unfortunately, mammograms aren't perfect. I think we've all kind of heard stories of a mammogram missing something and this and that. Well, that happens. But for the most part, it is a wonderful tool that is necessary. Usually recommendations are starting at age 40 every year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that changes based on family history. Obviously, if someone's sister or their mother had breast cancer at age 38, you're not going to wait till 40 to get your first mammogram. Usually it's recommended to do 10 years before your mother or your sister or someone else like that.
Okay. All right, good. Now, we will take a quick break and be right back with more as we tackle breast cancer right here on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic with guest expert Dr. John Kailik, Moffitt Cancer Center.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough? Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, we are talking about advances in breast cancer treatment with Dr. John Kailik from Moffitt Cancer Center Research Institute. And we began by talking about what women can do to screen against breast cancer. And there are three points that Dr. Kailik was making. Number one is to initiate the self-breast exam. And this is, I think, something very important, that because the breast exam can change during the course of a month, that young ladies, even as young as 18, should start to begin to perform self-examination so they know what their breasts feel like as they get along in their life. The second point that John made was mammography, and how mammography has really helped reduce the number of breast cancer cases or advanced breast cancer cases through the 1980s and 1990s. And John, what was that third point that you wanted to make about help screen against breast cancer?
Well, I think the third part is to this attack in screening for breast cancer is that you have a regular exam by a physician. Unfortunately, nothing that we have is perfect. Self-exam isn't perfect. Mammography is not perfect. Doctor's exams aren't perfect. But the point of setting up these layers is that you're creating walls, and the chances of something kind of sneaking through all those barriers is decreased the more walls that we put up.
Well, that's very important. And I can, you know, share with you and our listeners an experience I had as a third-year medical school student, where I was actually the first patient I saw as a third-year student. And I went in the room, and at least in my medical school I attended, they did not tell us ahead of time the diagnosis of the patient. So I went in, and I sat down, and the patient was gowned in her hospital room. And I asked her, why was she hospitalized? And she says, oh, I've got a small irritation on my left breast. And we finished the history, and it was at that point, of course, time for the examination, and she undid her gown, and she showed me the irritation. And let me tell you something. That was no irritation. Her entire left breast was ulcerated with just a terrible, in fact, it was all eaten away by what was obviously, to this third-year medical school student at the time, a terrible advanced cancer, and because of the advanced stages, it had gotten infected, and it had, you know, a certain odor to it. So I guess the point is that, and as John and I were talking earlier on break, I mean, this has obviously been there for years, and the denial that, I guess, John, you see in your practice from many people who are just not having a hard time accepting the fact that they have breast cancer.
Well, this disease is scarier than hell. It's confusing, you know, especially when you look on the internet, you can get lost in terms and stuff like that. And it is scary, scary stuff that you're dealing with. And I think, you know, that's why shows like this are so very important, is that you're bringing things that are unknown and scary, just more information to the listener. And even though it's still scary, going from the unknown to the known makes it a little bit more tolerable.
And we like to think that as we educate more and more people, creating this interactive safety net, and entire families have learned about these different issues and different medical problems, that we can help each other, and there's no reason really to let the disease get out of hand. Early detection through education, prevention, has made all the difference in the world for breast cancer patients. Is that not the case?
Oh, absolutely. It's truly amazing to me. It's actually kind of scary. When I go to the grocery store now, or I'm at the mall or wherever, and I'm walking around, I've actually started to train my eye to pick out the women with breast cancer. Just little clues here and there. You know, I can obviously tell they had surgery. They may be wearing a bandana from, you know, chemotherapy, or maybe just be a little pink ribbon they have in the bracelet. And on one hand, that is scary stuff that you can just pick out the women and you can say, oh my gosh, look at all the people it's affected. But on the other hand, if you look at it, they're at the grocery store.
That's right.
They're living their life. Now, obviously, not every case is that good. And, you know, we've all heard just terrible stories about breast cancer. I don't mean to make light of that. But we're making such amazing strides. And that's why you really can't go anywhere without seeing a pink ribbon anymore.
And the more we can educate the folks out there, the better we can pick up these diseases and avoid the terrible consequences. And so for that reason alone, again, we thank you for being here. I tell you, we have on the line Shirley. Shirley is Shirley, are you there? You're on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
I am here.
And Shirley is one of Dr. Kylik's patients. And would you like to briefly just introduce your story, and then we'll be going to a quick break and coming back.
Okay. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in October of 2007. Thank goodness my husband and I made the decision to go right up to Moffitt and were introduced to Dr. Kylik. And he looked at my mammogram and, you know, did tell me that, yes, I did have breast cancer and that it was a little bit more serious than what we were thinking. And he guided me in my regimen, what I should be doing. And I have had great success. I am feeling great and looking great. And, you know, I'm just very thankful that the two of us were hooked up together in my surgery and everything.
All right.
So good.
Stay with us, Shirley. We'll be right back after break and have a nice conversation. We'll be right back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Talk Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Speeding up the troop pullout from Iraq is not something President Barack Obama will consider. He tells CBS TV's Face the Nation that the withdrawal plan his administration has put forward is the right one, says he is confident the situation in Iraq is moving in the right direction as well. The president also says he will consult with Pakistani leaders before pursuing terrorist hideouts in their country. In an interview with CBS, Mr. Obama said Pakistan needs to be more accountable, but he is ruling out deploying U.S. troops there. Officials in Fargo, North Dakota, say the threat of flooding won't be over for several days. The Red River receding, but it's still more than 22 feet above flood stage. And a new study suggests statin drugs like Crestor and Lipitor can cut the risk of dangerous blood clots. Millions take the drugs to lower cholesterol and prevent heart disease. But doctors say the study's results provide a reason for people with normal cholesterol to consider taking them too. This is SRN News.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling breast cancer today, and on the line is Shirley. Shirley, are you still with us? Okay, now you're in your late 40s,
mm-hmm.
and you had a diagnosis of breast cancer in October of 07
mm-hmm.
made. And tell us, was there a family history of breast cancer?
Not breast cancer. Both my parents have passed away from cancer, but my mother did not have breast cancer. She had a different type of cancer.
Okay, and tell us, was it a lump, and if so, was it discovered on breast self-examination?
Actually, I had just gotten a little tool that someone had shared with me that had gotten me doing my breast exams much easier, and I had felt a place that felt different than the rest of them, and pointed it out to my gynecologist. Unfortunately, she just kind of blew it off and said she didn't feel like it was anything, but I was scheduled for a mammogram anyway, so I went ahead and had my mammogram, and that's when they detected that there was something different from my prior mammogram, so it's very important to get your mammograms, you know.
Let me stop you there.
Mm-hmm.
You had said something I want to try to focus on. You said
uh-huh.
that someone had given you an idea or a different technique, a better way to do a breast self-exam?
Well, there is an instrument out there called, it's a Plexus Pink. It's like a little mouse pad, and it has a gel in the center, of, you know, in the middle of it, and it's when you lay it on your your breast and do a breast exam, it just brings out the tissue much.
John, are you familiar with this?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just easier to feel it, you know. So that's how I discovered, you know.
And John, would you make a comment on that?
Well, there are many different tools out there to aid in self-breast examination. And I whatever gets the job done, I'm all for.
Okay. So you're familiar with this, and you've seen it obviously work in this case.
Yes.
Shirley, where did for our listeners that are interested in picking up something like this, where can you find one?
There's independent distributors all over the place. I unfortunately have the girl that I got mine from. I don't think she's doing it anymore. So.
And it's called Plexus Pink.
Plexus Pink. Yeah.
Plexus Plexus.
Uh huh.
And Pink.
And I think if you Google it, you can find distributors all over the place.
So you feel that using that technique, you were able to get a better sense of mm-hmm. a lump that was there?
I felt like when I did my self-exams, I felt like that they were showing me more, so therefore I wanted to do them more.
Interesting.
You know?
Interesting, yeah.
And I could tell in that one place that it, I can't remember the term that they used
mm-hmm.
for the one place, but it wasn't actually a lump. Calcification, that's what it was. And that's where they detected the actual cancer.
Okay, and so you used this. How long were you using this Plexus Pink before you found something that?
Probably a good 4 or 5 months. Okay. It wasn't a real long time, but it was enough to see that, you know, feel that there was something different.
And you had been doing breast exams for a while before that?
On and off. You know, I can't say that I did it every single month by any means, but from, you know, the time that I got that, I did them every month, yeah.
Okay. So there's something about this that seemed to you to make it more productive.
Right, basically. But
very, very important. Okay, so you found there's something there, and you went to your gynecologist, and the gynecologist evaluated the lump himself, him or herself, and was not impressed at that time?
She didn't seem to think it was anything that we needed to worry about. You know, it's not that she really blew it off. She just didn't feel it. She didn't think it was anything.
Okay.
But at the same time, I was going for my mammogram, my annual mammogram. So the people at the, you know, Manatee Diagnostic
right.
found it right off the bat.
Okay.
You know, because that's where I'd been going for a number of years, and they could compare them. And so that's where it went from there. Then I had what is that term? It's not a lumpectomy because that's not what I...
Excisional biopsy.
There you go.
Okay.
The biopsy done. And the surgeon did say that he did find cancer and wanted to do the lumpectomy, but Dan and I just felt like, you know, we're so close to Moffitt, why not go to the experts? So
okay. All right.
That's where we ended up and had a, you know, for something that was you know, life-threatening and so scary because the word cancer is just a scary thing.
That's right.
You know, they walked us through it, and Dr. Kylik was wonderful in explaining every single detail. Even whenever I forgot some details, he would explain them to me again. And, you know, it was just a very, you know,
a good experience
for something that could be so bad.
So let's walk through that. The first day there, obviously you had a diagnosis of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The excisional biopsy or the biopsy was positive.
Mm-hmm.
So no one knew at that point how advanced it was, correct?
That's correct. But Dr. Kylik did, because I didn't know what to do, you know.
Right.
Dr. Kylik, you know, after examining my films, did suggest that I do a double mastectomy because I was so young. And with reconstruction, I looked at him and said, I don't need to do reconstruction. My husband loves me no matter what. And he said, surely you need to do reconstruction. And I am so glad that he did because that's a very important thing.
Right. And you didn't know what to expect at the time.
Yeah, I had no idea. Yeah. You know, I had no idea, but... You know, it just turned out to be a very comfortable thing to walk through because there was so much knowledge given to you. Mm-hmm. Everything was told to me up front. He was very, you know, he sat down with me and he held my hand. He spoke with my husband eye to eye. You know, he was not, mm-hmm. you know, it just, the whole thing was good.
Did you feel like you found a teammate, a partner in dealing with
this? Yes.
Yeah.
We're friends now, buddy.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you, Shirley.
You too, Mr. Kylik.
Now, tell me about, did you all do any, you evaluated for genetic, or had genetic testing performed?
I think I did. I don't know.
So-called BRCA gene. Do you remember?
Do you remember if I did, Dr. Kylik?
I do not remember any
okay.
situation.
I don't remember that either. That's the portion that, you know, that we're banging heads on still with the oncologist, because whenever I had my surgery, they did take some lymph nodes out and did some testing on the lymph nodes. They did seem to find some kind of cancer in my lymph system. So I did have to go back in and have all the lymph nodes taken out from underneath my left arm.
Okay.
Which I think it was 23 lymph nodes, and they did not find any further cancer in that.
Okay.
So I was good to go. You know, they did want to do chemotherapy on that, and, you know, for me, that is a strong personal choice. You know, I opted out of that because mm-hmm. I feel like if you strengthen the body enough, that your body can fight its battle, and mm-hmm. that's the approach that I'm coming from. Now, that is not everybody's approach. I would not tell any, you know, it's everybody has a personal decision to make, so that's not something that I'm trying to, you know, steer anybody towards.
All right, two questions. One, you had a full body evaluation, PET scan, and so mm-hmm. forth evaluation, and no other signs of involvement.
My blood work is great. You know, everything looks good. I'm going back up there in April sometime to see the oncologist to have it all done again, so they're keeping tabs on me.
Okay. And John, how frequently in a case like this would a woman be evaluated with PET scanning?
Usually I leave that up to the discretion of the oncologist.
Okay.
A lot of it depends on how severe the disease is. Obviously, you know, the more lymph nodes involved, the more serious the cancer is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might determine how often you get scans. But, you know, generally speaking, the oncologist might get scans every year or so.
Mm-hmm. Now, Cheryl, you mentioned you try to strengthen your body as best you can. What approaches are you using?
I eat lots of fruits and vegetables. I do a whole food supplement called Juice Plus. I exercise. I, you know, try to keep my weight down, and I keep my spirits. You know, I do positive things mentally. I am a firm believer in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and He, you know, I am well-rounded, I guess, and, you know,
right.
I try to keep peace. I try to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally.
And do you avoid tobacco?
I do not drink. I do not smoke.
John, would you comment on these things? Are any of these found to be a factor?
Well,
like tobacco and alcohol.
Absolutely, tobacco and alcohol play an increased risk of breast cancer. But, you know, from my perspective, you know, surely, you know, exemplifies kind of one of my thoughts that I really like to tell my patients. It is really corny, this saying. So all the listeners, please beware. This is corny, corny, corny.
That's talk radio. It's okay, John.
But one of my favorite sayings is that if it's good for the soul, it's bad for the cancer. Meaning you have to find that happy place.
Yes.
And if you're happy internally, you're going to do well from a cancer standpoint. You know, as a doctor, you kind of like to pretend that you know all these wonderful things, this and that. But the more I do this, the more I realize there is more to this stuff than we will ever understand. There's a lot to be said about the power of the mind, the stuff that we just don't understand. And to be frank, I don't know if we'll ever understand it. And just by living that positive attitude, that life, whatever that is, you know, usually I say, mm-hmm. listen, if you like chocolate, eat a lot of chocolate, whatever that is, you know, just live a good, happy, healthy life.
And, you know, from the perspective of managing your own health, my recommendation, and that goes for no matter what your medical problem is, as we've shown on the show so many times over and over and over again since we began in October of last year, is that if you identify the problem early on, you can do things to thwart it, to defeat it. Not always the case, but your chances are a lot better if you are taking a proactive stance rather than sitting back like that poor woman that I saw as a third-year medical student who obviously didn't have much of a chance. So we control our own destiny to some extent, and for that, the more we do take that proactive stance, the better our chances are. But let's get back to breast cancer. And so is there any comments, John, you would like to make about the surgical choice that was confronted Shirley?
Well, when you talk about the breast and breast cancer, like I said earlier, you're really choosing between lumpectomy and mastectomy. Mastectomy can be done with and without reconstruction. To be perfectly honest, I try to stay out of that discussion as much as possible. Because plain and simple, I'm a young guy. It's impossible for me to understand where Shirley's coming from. I don't know what it's like to have breasts, so how can I comment on what it's like to have a moth? On the other hand, you know, I don't know what it's like to have cancer and what it's the fear of having a mammogram and having the radiologist say, oh, it's probably nothing once you've had cancer isn't exactly a smooth road either. And so what I like to do is I try to educate my patients about the emotional role of or the road ahead with any road of surgery. And, you know, it's my job to kind of educate and have the patient make that decision that makes the most sense for them emotionally, personally, because it is a very personal decision.
And one point I think we had talked about on the break is that when you have a mastectomy, it is important to continue to receive mammograms, correct?
Not mammograms.
Okay.
But do self-breast examination.
Self-breast exams.
And I think I probably tell this to Shirley every time I see her. It unfortunately is impossible to remove every little bit of breast tissue. In order to do that, we'd have to cut big gaping holes on the chest, and not too many people would sign up for that. So pretty much what we do is we remove the breast from underneath the skin. And underneath the skin, there's a small amount of breast tissue remaining, and so that's why it's important to do self-breast examination. But mammograms, MRIs are not generally needed.
Okay, good.
I don't know how you could with these.
Yes.
Shirley, any other comments you'd like to make before we wrap up your case for now?
The most important thing, I think, is, like I was saying, taking care of your bodies, you know, listening to your body, you know, because it gives you signals when something's wrong.
Right, and don't ignore them,
and don't ignore them. And if you're a young woman, you know, go ahead and have the reconstruction because it makes you feel whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I look better than I did before I had the surgery, so, you know, I'm very happy.
Great.
You know.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you, Shirley.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much, Shirley.
All right. So I'm good to go?
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay, so long now. John, would you like to comment on new techniques for surgery, such as the nipple-sparing mastectomy?
Well, traditionally, when mastectomies are performed, the nipples are removed because all the milk ducts where the cancer usually originate lead to the nipple. And that's the way they've been doing it for many, many, many years. Recently, there's been renewed interest in trying to preserve the nipple. And this is what we generally refer to as a nipple-sparing mastectomy. There are many different techniques to trying to preserve the nipple, but you can achieve excellent cosmetic outcomes with this technique. Unfortunately, not all cases are candidates for this. Obviously, as a relatively newer technique, you have to be very cautious with who you choose. It not only has to be an appropriate cancer that's preferably away from the nipple and smaller, but it actually has to be the appropriate size breast as mm-hmm. well. Pretty much the blood supply to the nipple not only comes from underneath from the breast tissue, but from the skin as well. And when you remove the breast itself, the blood supply has got to travel in the skin, and the larger the breast, the longer that blood has to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously with a very large, like a D-cup breast, that blood has to travel a very long way, and the nipple won't survive.
So this is nevertheless this is something that you're looking at more and more doing.
Absolutely.
Okay. And we will take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic Tackling Breast Cancer.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
In 1998, the Dow Jones was at 8,500 points. In October of 2008, the Dow was again at 8,500 points. 10 years and nothing to show for it. There were gains over the last 10 years. Did you capture them? If not, then all you had were paper gains soon to be lost. If the market continues its volatility, then you may end up with a paper decade once again. Life is too precious to give up 10 years of it. At Bush & Associates, you can capture your gains on autopilot. Their clients did from July 2006 to July 2007. Some captured up to 17% before the market went down, and they still have their gains today. They did not lose their gains. Stop the bleeding. Protect yourself. Make life count. Call Bush & Associates today at 888-595-6017. That's 888-595-6017. Bush & Associates, 888-595-6017.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I've been joined today by Dr. John Kylik. We've been tackling breast cancer treatment. And John, let me ask you about genetic testing in breast cancer. Who actually should get tested, and what's the purpose of the testing?
Well, first off, the purpose of the testing is to, one, determine at what elevated risk the patient may have of developing another breast cancer. Two, may be very important information for the rest of the family, namely sisters and daughters and cousins. But it's also will tell you it maybe what other cancers may be running with the breast cancer. Generally speaking, people with breast cancer do well. Obviously not all cases, but for the most part, people do well. Now, we got good screening, good medicines for breast cancer. But the BRCA gene, what we test for, also tests for ovarian cancer. And ovarian cancer is a much tougher cancer to deal with. And if we can know who is at high risk for that, maybe we can do something before then.
Yeah. Of course, ovarian cancer, my sense has always been that it's usually delayed in diagnosis.
Yes, that's the trouble. You know, with breast cancer, we have mammograms, we have self-breast exams, et cetera. But with ovarian cancer, there's really not. There are a few screening things we can do, but they're not at the level of mammography.
Now, you mentioned medication for breast cancer. We'd like to delve into that a little bit.
As far as hormones and...
Sure.
I guess one of the most common questions I get is, well, as what role do hormones play with breast cancer itself? It can be quite confusing reading the literature as far as, you know, do hormone replacement cause breast cancer? That is all over the board. I feel that it may have a slightly higher increased risk for breast cancer, but not overwhelming. And obviously there are lots of advantages to hormone replacement. Once someone obviously has a bout of breast cancer, then they should probably stop that. And as far as hormones are concerned, you know, a lot of breast cancers are fed by estrogen, in all honesty. And so we actually have pills that can starve the cancer from estrogen. And these are very powerful pills.
Mm-hmm. And so they block the effect of estrogen on the breast tissue.
Exactly. And then, you know, the nice thing about it is that the side effect profile for the most part is much more better tolerated than, say, something like chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. And do you, when a person has the breast cancer excised, is that tissue typically studied to see if it's it will respond to
absolutely
hormones?
Yes, the patients that when they get tested will have three receptors that we look for. One is estrogen, the other is progesterone, and the other is this protein called HER2-NU. And what those are if they're positive, it gives you a weapon to fight it. Kind of back to that analogy I used earlier, it's a spear that we can use to attack the cancer. Mm-hmm. So if the ER or PR are positive, the estrogen, I'm sorry, that we can give an anti-hormone pill. If the HER2-NU protein is positive, then we have a medicine called Herceptin that we can use to attack the cancer as well.
So even though the person may have had a mastectomy, you still consider adding those additional therapies if they're positive?
Possibly.
Okay.
There are kind of two parts to what we do. One is, well, how do we take care of the breast itself? And that's how you can decide between lumpectomy, mastectomy, possibly radiation, just trying to maintain local control of the disease. Mm-hmm. The other aspect is, well, how do we take care of the whole body itself? And that's where chemotherapy and anti-hormone pills and those kinds of things come into play.
Okay. So that's more in the realm of if there's some metastases out there.
Yes.
Systemic metastases. Yes,
it would help treat that disease.
All right. Well, John, this has been a great hour. I want to thank you so much for joining me here. Is there any last message you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think the last thing thought is get mammograms. They save lives. Be your best doctor.
Okay. Everybody remember that. Mammograms are the way to go. Start your breast self-examinations at 18 to get to know what the breasts feel like during a monthly, during the changes throughout the month. So when things change later on as you get older, you know right away and you can pick something up early on. This is Dr. Steve Maskin. We are the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And next Sunday, we'll be talking about TMJ dysfunction. For all you with a jaw that's cracking or bothering you or an aching anywhere in that part of your head, think about TMJ dysfunction. Call in next week. We'll be right here. See you then. Bye.